Black rag back left, cause I'm really with the shit. Said Black Lives Matter, cause that's what I really meant. All these white rappers in my city really hesitant. Time to pick a side, no more sitting on the fence.
This will be a two-part episode with the new Poet Laureate of Sacramento, Andrew Defy.
Welcome, everybody. This is Sharon Smith, and this is Iambic Podcast, where we talk to the poets, performers, and artists of the Sacramento area. I got a special treat for y'all. Guess who's on my podcast? I got none other than the Gorilla Poet, MC, founder of a crew, of eclectic crew that is right here still building and vibing. And now, the Poet Laureate of Sacramento, I'd like to give you Mr. Andrew Defy.
Bam, 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 bam.
What's up, fam?
Man, it's good. It's good, man. It's good to see you. It's good to be able to sit and reason a little bit about all this poetry, man. I'm really hyped to get to catch up with you. You've been doing a lot of things out here.
Thank you.
You've been documenting a lot of things and really pushing this work. And a lot of times we get so busy, we don't get to catch up. So I'm happy to see you, man.
Most definitely, man. Well, I wanted to, it was surprising enough when you basically said you want, it's like, man, I'll be on your podcast. I was like, what? I was like, I ain't going to lie. I was a little trippy. I'm like, he said yes.
Ah, man, this is the fun part. You know what I mean? These are conversations with people that I have been building with. You know what I mean? Like some of the press stuff gets weird. You know, I got mad social anxiety, so I don't like necessarily talking to press people or the media, but you know, talking to the homies is always fun. So
most definitely.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. No doubt. Then let's get it started, man. What got you on your poetic journey? What's your poet journey about your poet
origin? My poet origin story is it starts with my dad. My dad's a minister. So he's the minister of the words. My mom's the minister of the music. So my dad always wrote my mom poetry, and I remember finding that when I was young. And just like falling in love with it, like what he was doing with the language, and the fact that, you know, my dad dated out of his league, my mom is out of his league, so, you know, he was able to do it through poetry, and I found that early.
But he won.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like that's the power of these words. And then in, I would say around 13 years old, I start writing really heavily just to express, and I find it as an outlet to get things out of me.
Okay.
At first, it was, you know, anything from stories to just words and streams of consciousness. And through high school, that was kind of how I coped with everything that was going on in my life and all the trauma I was dealing with. So I end up going to continuation school because I get kicked out of regular school because I'm just sitting and doing poetry. I'm just sitting and writing. But at the time, I didn't know it was poetry.
Okay.
It wasn't until I went to continuation school. I had a teacher named Virgil Doogie who he said, "Hey, I want to see what you're writing." And I said, "Hell no, you can't read this. This is unabridged. This is my personal journal. Like, no." And he said he wouldn't get me in trouble and he would give me credits. And so he took my book and he read my book, and the next day he brought it back. He'd stuffed a bunch of his own poetry into the book, and it was like poems about like his ex-wife and like these like really hard things that he was like going through. And it was things that he told me and I knew that he could get in trouble for. So in that way, he was just as vulnerable with me as I was with him. And that poetry like showed me, you know, he was the one that was like, what you're doing is called poetry. You know, there's a lot of different formats and it's probably not what you think poetry is. Cause you know, I had a very roses are red, violets are blue kind of understanding of poetry at that time. And he introduced me to the Outlaw Bible of American Poetry. He gave me my first copy, and from there, like, I just fell in love with this art form. I start slamming. I start doing hip hop music. just anything I can do with these words. So that's my kind of my origin story is, you know, my first poem was a suicide note and it was very well written. So I decided not to do it.
Most definitely.
So, I'm going to fix this mic just real quick.
Go ahead.
Trying to figure out that's why
I got it.
You sure? I mean, you can take the mic off. Yeah,
can I just do that?
Yeah, you can do it. I just know that people moving the way they adjust the mic, as you always tell me, don't cuff the mic.
Yeah. I'll be very controlled with my mic movements. I got a legacy out here.
Most definitely. But no, so where are you from? Technically,
man, I'm from the stars.
Like
real talk. I'm still figuring out which exact star system, you know, within some of these galaxies I'm from. But I grew up in Wasco, California, which is a small city outside of Bakersfield, California. Bakersfield was the big city to me. In high school, I moved to Manteca, California.
I know Manteca.
And then I did high school out there. And then I moved to San Francisco right around, I think 2021, I moved to San Francisco.
Okay.
And then I came out to Sacramento in 2009, 2008.
Okay. Yeah. So you must be moving around. So,
all over California.
Manteca.
All over California. Oh, geez.
I still remember Manteca.
Yeah.
I was in Stockton. So.
It claimed a lot of my friends, you know?
Oh, really?
Claimed a lot of people I grew up with. Just that there wasn't much to do.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, there weren't things to do for the youth to get into other than some drugs, some nonsense.
Had that water
slide. You know,
oh, God. Had that water slide.
And they killed it.
Yes,
and they killed it off. Like that's the. So yeah. I don't know. I hope things are picking up a little bit out there for those folks. I know a couple of educators who are working out there and doing some really cool things. Been bringing the kids out for some interactive art out here in Sacramento. So I know they got some folks doing some work out there. So shout out. I'll be out there soon.
So explain to me, what is a guerrilla poet?
A guerrilla poet. I define that as someone who takes poetry into public places where it's not conventional.
Okay.
So that means it all kind of started with, I think we first did the guerrilla art flash mobs. So it was like, yo, we're just going to show up and make art in these spaces and turn them into these sort of open mics that run themselves, right? Yeah. And then National Guerrilla Poetry Month kind of followed that. And it just kind of became this idea of we create art in public spaces.
Okay.
And unbeknownst to the public spaces. I think that's what makes it guerrilla, is that like you kind of get ambushed. You know, someone's out for their morning coffee and then all of a sudden this griot bursts out in the middle of the coffee shop and it's like, wait, what's happening right now? Like, it's kind of these performances that just shift the mundane, you know? I think the idea, because we've done like guerrilla, the flash mobs where it was the love yourself flash mobs that didn't involve poetry. And they're still guerrilla, and that's in creating an experience, right? Like, I always want people to experience what we do and then walk away from that, pick up their phone, and whoever the next person is they talk to go, you will not believe what just happened to me. These guys started rapping on this bus, and then the bus driver pulled over, and then they got everybody to hey and ho with them, and it turned into a whole rap show for 3 minutes, and then we all just sat down like nothing happened and rode to the what? That's wild. You know what I mean? And it has that, like, it just gives people an experience and something that we can all connect through, and then a story you can tell later, you know? That's why there's pink gorillas and unicorns involved, you know? Sometimes you got to call out the big guns.
Yeah, speaking of the big guns, so I know you work for Soul Collective as their director of communications.
Yes, sir.
But you also have an inner group under Soul Collective, which is, well, let's talk about Soul Collective, then we'll talk about ZFG.
Word.
So what do you technically do with Soul Collective?
Man, Soul Collective. So we're a collective. So I do a little bit of everything. You know, we all I clean the toilets as much as I can. But my main focus over there is grant writing.
Okay.
So I work to develop funds for a lot of the programs. Through the years, I've hosted programs over there and created and developed programs. These days, I'm really trying to work more on just the funding and really on helping to develop the next generation of leadership. I feel like one thing that's always made Soul Collective special was that it was youth run. It was a group of young people that got together and decided this is what the community needed. And so these were the programs that we were going to do and how we were going to address community needs. So I think getting the next generation in there, you know, I'm 35. I don't need to be designing open mic programs anymore. I don't know what the youth want from an open mic, you right. know? So getting these like young 18 to 20 year old kids like groomed up and just gamed up on how to do all this, and you give them a little bit of that experience that you have and set them loose, and I'm looking forward to that part really. Okay. So that's my role and my move right now is to really like kind of back up a little bit and watch what the youth are doing and some incredible programming that they're coming up with. But shout out Jonah and Davion, Star, Diamond, Yeshaya, Kazaya, all of y'all.
Most definitely. So, but no, you've run a lot of events there. You've done the most open mic in the city. Is it called the most or the best?
The most.
Okay.
The most. I would never ever claim to be the best.
Okay.
I never claim to be the best open mic in this city.
Okay.
People can all have their opinions on what's the best for them. What we wanted to do was have the most open mic in the city, so that there was never really any censorship. You know, the only any form that kind of looked like censorship came from the hater screen.
Right.
And that's kind of like the collective consciousness for the whole room. You know, so if you said something that upset the entire room, then the entire room might start bombing you on the hater screen. But you know, you should probably as an entertainer and an artist who seeks to connect with your crowd, you should take that as a lesson that you didn't read the energy right, you know, like, or you disrespected the room somehow.
This, for the people that know, this what he's talking about is in the back of the performer on the upper top, there was you can actually text into an actual screen.
You text in anonymously, yes. So no one would know who it was from, and you could text in commentary behind people yeah. while they were performing. It was interesting because the culture of the spot and the culture of the events is always love,
right?
So there's not a lot of like roasting that happens. The only time I've ever seen it go terribly wrong was this gentleman walked in, and he was a rapper, and he was on his super ego that day, and he said, "This isn't what I normally do, but can you curse on this?"
Yeah, go ahead.
He said, "This isn't what I normally do, but I'm gonna give you some of that ignorant shit that y'all like." And the whole crowd made the same face that you just made.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Like so we like ignorant shit, right? So we're ignorant. Okay. Word. And as soon as this dude started performing, like the roasting just started and did not stop for a full 2.5 minutes. Like,
damn.
I'd never seen anyone getting eaten alive that way. But it was also like you just disrespected the crowd.
Crowd. Yep.
You disrespected the energy of the room. You disrespected the culture of the event, and you were made known. You know what I mean? So it happens. But I will also say that dude came back like a month later and was a lot more humble and had a better performance. So, you know, that honest criticism, I'm a firm believer in it. One of the reasons we did the hater screen was because when I came out here, no one in the hip hop community, it was such limited opportunities that even if someone had a whack show, they would come outside to a bunch of people who just been telling each other how whack the show was.
Yeah.
And that person would come outside and they'd get dapped up and all this love. Yo, man, great show tonight. Da, 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 da. Like, because they were afraid that they wouldn't get called the next time that someone booked a show.
Right.
Right. So this, but it like keeps everybody down. It keeps people's performances at a lower level than they could be.
Right.
People don't reach their highest potential when they're not told what their highest potential could be. So that was kind of always the culture. And that's part of the culture of ZFG as a whole, is that like honest.
But you also had Plugged.
Yeah. Plugged is the gym. We just, again, felt like there was a lack of, like, a jam space. I knew a bunch of musicians and, like, you know, folks travel and, like, the musicians be like, yo, I went to this amazing jam in Austin. They just let me sit in and all of a sudden we're having, and there wasn't really a space to do that, especially within, like, the hip hop community.
Okay.
So, yeah, we set up Plugged as kind of that. We had a, for a while, we had a drummer and a guitarist that would, like, kind of hold down those parts and then whatever other instruments came in. And then it just became, like, whoever was around that night. And it became, like, a secret recipe that the universe would concoct. And we just kind of go for whatever, you know?
That's his pug, if y'all didn't hear that.
Yeah, if y'all see me getting distracted, it's because my monster is going crazy. So, yeah, Plugged was just I noticed that a lot of the hip-hop kids, the rappers, right, we practice, we write by ourselves, we practice by ourselves, we perform by ourselves. There's no connection as far as other people in the music. It was to a point where when ZFG did Concerts in the Park, I said, yo, that's a big show, we need a band. And folks were like, well, can a band play these beats? And it's like, yo, you realize we sample records that have all those instruments on them, right? Like that's where we get our, you know, so there's a disconnection a little bit. So I wanted to make sure that there was a space where the young rappers, especially singers, just artists, but like rappers especially, needed to realize the dynamics of working with a live band. Mm-hmm. And the music is a living entity.
Right.
When it's played live, and it's a different effect than when it's on a beat machine, because this is a mechanical rhythm and it's not a living organism, where if you play with a band, if you get loud, they'll get louder, and if you get quiet, they'll get quieter, and you can tell each part to give the bass man some, give the drummer some, like, and it moves a lot differently. And I think a lot of young people, because of the accessibility of hip-hop, didn't really have experience working with a live band. Yeah. And then like instrumentalists, and it's a whole different like level of energy, and just, you know, it's a whole different high.
And since you've been point that out, you also have a beat making week. I forgot what it was called.
Yeah. We did a Symphonic with the Philharmonic. Yeah. Okay. And which was just for the beat heads, because there's a lot of young folks who make incredible, like, they work on this electronic production, but they do it all in their bedrooms.
Okay.
And no one hears it except for SoundCloud, and there's no actual, you know, like, so trying to build a community where, like, you see amazing beat communities in, like, Los Angeles, right? And there's some legendary, like, legendary beat makers who stay in Sacramento.
DiBiase.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, people don't understand, like, how important that dude was to the development of the West Coast sound. Yeah. On this production shit, on this SP shit, like, so yeah, man, like, always just trying to create a space for folks to come out, create a community, be heard, and that community part of it, you know, the music and the art should be communal.
Okay. Now let's switch it over. So what is ZFG?
ZFG stands for Zero Forbidden Goals. The best way that I've ever heard it explained, so I'm the founder, and the best way I've ever heard it explained was by, and yes, David DeMola, and someone asked me at the intersection, they said, are you guys a rap crew? Are you a promotions company? Are you a poetry group? What is ZFG? And I said, I'm gonna let David field that question, because I answer it too much. And David said, it's a support group for artists. And that's, it like shook me to my core. I'd never realized like how true that was, and that's really what it was, because we don't have a business license. We don't really worry about money like that. Like, anything that we do as a crew is like because we want to do it and we love to do these kind of guerrilla arts. We love to create experiences for people.
So I've always been questioning who's in ZFG? Who's the member?
That's a deep multi-layered question. Because there's like a founding crew of folks where you look at like, you know, Paul, Liv, alien logic, Russell, Spacewalker, Avery. The reason I'm slow is I'm trying to go in like chronological order as folks like join the crew, you know, and then there's, you know, Philharmonic Hobo Johnson come in a little bit later. So like, but it's because it's not, we're not a gang. We're not a record label. We're not a, like, there's no expectation on any member to like go out there and rep the gang or like go out there and you gotta put in your work or whatever, you know, like it's just literally a bunch of folks who would come over to my house and we eat together and we share our projects with each other and we would talk about what we wanted to do and we set goals together. And that was like part of the early thing, was a lot of us just being frustrated by the way that the scene and the city itself were working, and set some goals with each other that were like, yo, we want to change the culture of the city. How are we going to do that? Well, we need to open up some spaces. How are we going to open up some spaces? How are we going to create spaces where they don't exist? And really walking through that whole process. So there's like that core group of people that, like, you know, when you think of like 2014, 2015, 2016, the start of ZFG that really put us on the map, that's that group of people. But I would also say even in that, like, you got to look at folks like Element Brass Band, who like always came through for us. You know, there's artists all around the city, yourself included. Think about all of the artists that come out, Jeanette, Grace, Callie, Kaya, all of these artists that come out and help us do these, the intersection, you know, and help us power these things. Like, everybody's in ZFG. For us, it's not what people think it is. You know what I mean? Like, for me, it's a very inclusive idea that, like, it doesn't take me saying you're in ZFG. Like, do you have zero forbidden goals? Do you want to see your fellow artists, like, succeed? Are you willing to support that? Then you cut from the same cloth, you know?
And also, David DeMola, and yes, he's also all a part of the team.
Oh, how am I going to forget that? Dadu, Radio, Paul Willis. Man, I hate that question because of that. Like, there's been so many folks, and it always, like, because it was just really, like, whoever was down and was moving was in it, you know?
So since you have all these sort of people, I've noticed that a lot of them aren't hip-hop artists. So I've always been, like, concerned with the fact that it's always been told that ZFG is a hip-hop crew, when it's technically a multimedia facet crew
of people. Yeah, and I think that's why people had a hard time boxing us in at the beginning. Was like, I made hip hop. You know, Luke Taylor was there really heavy at the beginning too. He was making hip hop. Avery was making hip hop. Paul Willis was making hip hop. Space was doing Space's thing, which is close enough to hip hop that you can set her down in proximity. And I think a lot of folks tried to kind of push it that way, but didn't realize, like, at the same time, that our big thing was, like, going out on street corners where there was no beats. You know, these are real poets, regardless of the fact that they did their primary form as rap. Like, you know, I think if you, you know, we say if you can't rap over a soul clap, then you can't rap. Real talk. And, like, those guys can all hold their own, whether they have a soul clap, whether they don't got nothing, they're poets. So it was natural when, like, David started coming around, and, like, you just feel, I guess you just know, like, for me, I just know what that ZFG energy is. Okay. Right? Like, I know when somebody's moving in love, and if you're moving in love, I'll feel that shit. Like, I speak feelings and emotions fluently.
Okay.
And so it was like a natural progression where, you know, his poetry made everyone else's rap better.
Okay.
Being around a bunch of rappers who just focused on bars, that's bars, bars, made his poetry better.
Right.
all of us watching Spacewalker do what Spacewalker does made all of us better.
Right.
That can't be understated. And I think all of us just really pick up a lot of things and a lot of confidence from each other. You know, these are some of my favorite artists on the planet. So when I put out a project and I show, it's not me showing my friends, it's me showing my favorite artists on the planet. So if I get a Spacewalker cosign or I get a Philharmonic cosign, like that's huge for me. So it helps kind of boost me up a little bit in my own confidence with my art and my own freedom of creativity.
Speaking of your art, so you are an MC, a poet, and you're also a beat maker or a producer.
That's what they say.
So you basically doing three. Let's go right now with the MC and beat maker part. You make a lot of beats for other people as much as yourself because you have two albums out. So how do you enjoy the beat making side? Just do the DIY of the whole thing?
Man, beat making is like one of those things like poetry for me. Like I come home every day and I either sit and write or I sit and make beats, cause I
breathe in all your misery, self-made. Breathe out and cast the shame and the doubt away. Got no business in my life, so bird out of my sight. Might only have tonight, so I get ultraviolet. So yeah, I get ultraviolet.
And again, I feel like this is just in me. Like I said, my father is the minister of the words and my mom's the minister of the music. So it kind of all depends on which mood I'm in. But I just make music all the time. I love the process of making music. So that just leads me to experimenting. And then like people will hear it and be like, oh, what are you doing with that one? And I'm like, oh, there's like 600 where that came from. Do you want that one? I'm very selective about the folks that I work with and that I give my beats to, because it's my art, right? And I've had it, especially with hip hop. I feel like if the music comes first, then it's on the person who writes the lyrics to interpret. You are an interpreter of the music. It's not on you to speak over the top of the music. You're supposed to speak for the music.
Right.
And I've had a couple incidents with rappers where like, you know, I put some real deep magic into this beat, and then what I got out over the top of it was, we having a party at the club. Like, yeah, that can feel magic, but that's not what went into it. You know what I mean? That's not what the music was saying.
So you're kind of selective.
Yeah.
The people that touch,
you know? Yeah. I'm really selective about who I produce for. But I have been producing a lot more of my own stuff, and I'm working on just putting more of the instrumental stuff out. I want to work on I keep calling it somewhere between like meditation music and makeout music. Like there's like a really chill like vibe that I really enjoy, and I've had a couple folks ask me about doing like some meditation music, and I work a lot with I'm big into like frequencies and the binaural frequencies and like how to put those into the beats, and sometimes using those as like the kick drum or the bass lines, so that you're getting hit with these vibrations that are, you know, they interact chemically in your brain,
right.
As well as just being like, oh, that dope, that beat's dope, right? Right.
You want to let her out or anything?
No, I think there's probably a couple of kids who are like hanging out around the neighborhood. yeah. So I have for everyone who doesn't know, if you don't follow me on Instagram and you don't know that I have the most adorable pug in the entire world, but she's also kind of a monster. She thinks she's 10 feet tall, and she likes to flex.
So speaking of which, beyond the shows you did inside Soul Collective, you also did a lot of shows outside Soul Collective, like the like Drunk Poetry, Intersection. Explain to me does those shows got so much heart as much as you do for the ones inside Soul Collective? I mean, meaning do you, because when you do those shows, I see both sides. You're like, you're very proud that these things are still around or these things are existing in this space. So I'm trying to see if doing something like Drunk Poetry breaks through a lot of what the social norm of poetry is about, or even Intersection, where you basically, it seemed like every time you do a show, you're trying to break a social norm in its place. You know, like intersections, it's a cipher. It's in an area where, like you said, it's been pointed out, it's a gentrified area now. But it used to be, this is where all the black people, this is where all the people of color used to be at. And they used to come here, they used to drink and stuff. They used to talk, used to make noise and stuff. And now that has been somewhat gentrified and stuff, not many people do that. So I'm taking it back to that space where the ancestors were at before. And same thing with drunk poetry. You know, there used to be people who used to go to bars and do poetry. They'll talk poetry. They'll make songs out of everything they're doing, but no one does that. Most people just come here, let the music play, and just, you know, I'm gonna let you talk about it.
I once got kicked out of a bar here in town for doing poetry.
Really?
It's pretty funny. No, I think you're spot on with that. I'm always trying to take things to a place where they aren't currently, and expose people to new experiences and expose poetry to new audiences. Soul is a very traditional place, right? So there's the fulfillment that comes from that is like knowing that like the programming that I'm creating is helping to power a legacy that I get to be a part of, right? So that's a very deep fulfillment for me. That's like life's purpose kind of stuff. Drunk poetry is my life's purpose in a whole other way. it's having fun with the art form. If you are a poet, then chances are you have sat in a room at one point or another and listened to poetry that was hard to listen to, right? And that wasn't fun. We sit around a lot and we dissect our traumas. We dive into the depths of the human condition. We search for beauty. Sometimes there's not a lot of laughing. And I feel like that's crucial. That's crucial to people's being open to learning something new. If you're not enjoying it, then you probably won't come back, right? So an event like Drunk Poetry, where we get to have some fun with the art, you know, and we're honoring these forms. We're actually, you know, I really feel like we probably taught more people about some of these poetry forms, like haikus, than any poetry workshop series that I know of or that I've ever been a part of, right? Like these are, it's 100+ people a night that are learning to write haikus together because we got some good beer going and, you know, we're having a good time. So, you know, that has its own joy in it for me. And then the intersection is, again, like that's another part of my like highest purpose. I think being someone who has the opportunity to be a catalyst for something bigger than myself, right? Like in that particular area, Old Soul hit me up. They said, we want to do an open mic. I said, I have no interest in doing a regular open mic. Like, I don't have the bandwidth to do it. And then once we started talking to the community and the youngsters that lived out there, they said, that's Oak Park Light. Right, that's where all the new neighbors are moving in. So how do we create conversations between the original and the OG neighbors and the new folks moving in? And how do we have these conversations through the arts and make these conversations okay to have? The arts are really powerful in being able to do that. So, you know, it's a different, they're all different pieces of me. Right, like the intersection and all of the, you know, the flash mobs, the most open mic in the city, anything where there's like a little bit of risk to it, you know, where it's like, yo, they might try and come shut us down for this. Like they might say we don't belong here, and then we're gonna have to explain to them that we belong here, like, and make them feel that, you know, because I feel it in my bones when I say that we belong here. You know, when we say these are our street corners, like these are our street corners. These are our cornerstones, you know? So, yeah.
Seeing that you are a risk taker, or you basically provoke a lot of people who just basically doesn't see it. I read that you had some medical conditions when you were born and stuff, and you were basically brought up to thinking that you weren't going to live till 15. and now you're 30, you know, you passed that.
Yes, sir.
And is that always been on your mind, even from day one, that if I don't do it, then...
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I grew up thinking that every time that I went to the hospital might be my last.
Okay.
And then at 15 to 16 years old, I found out that I wasn't supposed to live past 15. So from that moment on, everything feels like I'm on borrowed time.
Okay.
So it's always, you know, whether it was positive or negative, and I've made some really negative choices in my younger days based on that borrowed time mentality. But now I think it's I'm at a way healthier place with it, being a little older and having some experience. But it definitely drives, like, yo, you say you want to write a book. Don't sit around on that for the next 5 years. Don't, you know, hold off on this big idea that you had to do to bring some guerrilla art to the venues. You know, when we started doing the takeovers, like, that was nerve-wracking. That was one of the most nervous, like, moments that I've ever had in my life, about to walk into Slice of Broadway. Like, yo, I just brought 50 people in here.
ZFG is out here. Zero Forbidden Ghost. So what we're doing tonight is we're bringing art to the people in Sacramento. We didn't have a venue. We decided, why not make a venue? So we headed over to Slice of Broadway. Like I said, this is Flash Mob, guerrilla art style in Sacramento. They have no idea we're coming.
For I don't know what's about to happen. I hope everybody's ready for this. Like, but again, like, what are you going to do? Not do it? Sit mm-hmm. around the rest of your life and wonder what would have happened if you did take that chance? I didn't really feel like I had that luxury early on. And I think that's been earlier on in my life. It was a curse, but it's definitely a blessing as I look at it in hindsight.
That concludes part one of our two-part interview with Andrew Defy. For more information, please go to linktr.ee/iambiczine. IAMBICZINE. Thank you.